The 4th District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Craig H.D. Armon presiding.
Morning, counsel. We'll call as our first case 4-21-0713, People of the State of Illinois versus Victoria Baker. Would counsel for the appellant please state your name for the record?
My name is Elizabeth Boddy from the State Appellate Defender's Office.
Thank you. Counsel for the appellee, could you please state your name for the record?
My name is David Manchin from the Appellate Prosecutor's Office.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Boddy, you may proceed.
Good morning. Victoria Baker was charged by accountability with harassment of a witness for running one of the many errands ran for her sister. She delivered a letter to her sister's boyfriend, Richard Rountree. There's no evidence that Victoria had the specific intent to harass or annoy Richard into lying on the stand. And the only reason why the jury convicted her is because it misunderstood the law of accountability. Now, the state makes one main argument on appeal, and it's that this is a common design case, and that under the common design theory of accountability, the evidence is sufficient to prove Victoria's guilt and no trial errors occurred. This is wrong. This is a shared intent case and always has been a shared intent case. The jury was not instructed on the common design theory of accountability. The prosecution did not argue the common design theory of accountability. It acknowledged it had to prove her intent. It argued her intent was to pressure Richard into lying on the stand. Because the state never argued the common design theory of accountability, Victoria never presented a defense to it. Her defense was solely that the state did not prove her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt because it did not and could not prove that she had the specific intent to harass or annoy Richard. At the hearing on the motion for new trial, which challenges the evidence, there was one issue. Did the state prove Victoria's specific intent to harass or annoy? And the state argued it did. It argued that the jury found that she had a specific intent to harass or annoy. No one said, and the judge agreed, no one ever said anything about the common design theory because the prosecution knew it didn't apply in this case. The common design theory applies when you have two people agree to commit a crime, let's say robbery, and one of them commits an unplanned crime in furtherance of the planned crime, let's say murder. They're all accountable. Everyone who agreed to that robbery is accountable for the murder. We don't have that here. We don't have an agreement. We don't have an unplanned crime committed in furtherance of the intended crime. It just doesn't make sense. And the prosecution recognized that. That's why the prosecution argued the shared intent theory. And it's completely inappropriate for the state to now argue for the first time on appeal in an effort to affirm Victoria's conviction. This is a common design theory case. The state's reliance on the common design theory offends basic concepts of notice and due process and fairness. And it's relying on it for one reason: to circumvent its failure to prove mens rea. There simply was no evidence in this case that Victoria Baker shared the specific intent to harass or annoy Richard. There's no evidence that she knew of the letter's criminal intent. The state conceded she did not know the content of the letter before she got it. Victoria testified she did not read the entire letter before she delivered it to Richard. She said she read a couple lines that implicated Richard in Rika's abuse, and so she brought it to Richard. That testimony went unrebutted.
The state didn't. Does the instructions on accountability distinguish between common design and shared intent?
IPI 5.03 has additional bracketed language that is used in common design theory cases, and it was not given to the jury in this case. Nor was there a non-IPI explaining common design that often occurs in common design theory cases.
So the instructions that were given here don't distinguish between common design and shared intent?
No, the instructions are just the general IPI 5.03 without the bracketed language that is used in common design theory cases.
What bracketed language would that be?
It says that the word conduct includes criminal act done in furtherance of the planned and intended acts. And you use that bracketed language when the offense is different than the planned or intended act. That's what the common design theory is.
Is a jury not able to find the defendant guilty in common design theory if that language is not included in the instructions?
Not when the entire case is shared intent. The state argued shared intent.
That wasn't my question. As a matter of law, Is the jury?
I think typically in common design cases, that language is given. And if it's not, then oftentimes there's a non-IPI given. Neither one was given in this case.
Also, I want to ask you about the response to the jury's question. You assert that the counsel was ineffective with regard to his agreement to the response in this case, that essentially the judge should not answer the question, simply say, receive your instructions, read them. Is that correct?
Counsel was ineffective for not suggesting a different response.
So my question is this, am I correct that if the actions of counsel can be deemed to be strategic or tactical judgments by counsel, then an ineffective assistance of counsel claim fails?
There's no sound strategic reason for counsel.
Counsel, this would be a lot quicker and easier if you'd answer the question I asked.
If there was a sound strategic reason for him, then yes, strategy reasons are deemed are not ineffective, but there was no sound reason.
Let me follow up on this. all of us on this panel, before we got these wonderful jobs, had been trial judges and had handled lots of criminal cases in that capacity. And some of us had also been active participants as lawyers in criminal cases. And it's one of the cliches of criminal cases of truism that confused juries rarely convict. Would you agree with that?
No, I think in this case, a confused jury.
No, that wasn't my question, counsel.
My answer is no.
The statement that most trial judges and criminal lawyers think that typically confused juries don't convict.
And I'm saying no, in this case is a prime example because this confused jury.
So that's an incorrect statement of how things work generally?
I think, I can't say that in this case, the confused jury convicted. So I don't think it's a general statement. I don't think it's a correct statement to say.
We don't know what the jury's going to do. Counsel doesn't know what the jury's going to do. But my question is this. If a jury submits a question to the court, which indicates uncertainty or perhaps confusion about instructions regarding what the jury needs to find to convict, this wasn't an ancillary sort of issue, why should we ever conclude that counsel was ineffective, and this wasn't a tactical decision, to essentially say, I don't want this clarified for the jury. I want the jury to go back and remain in a state of uncertainty or confusion because that's a good thing for my client. Why isn't that sound tactics?
The confusion was on the critical element in this case of knowledge. And so any sound, reasonable defense attorney would want to make sure that the state was held to its burden of proof of proving every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And the problem here, when the jury expressed confusion on this question by referring the judge, by referring the jury back to the instructions, which were silent on knowledge, the judge is essentially telling the jury, the answer to your question is in those instructions. So the jury goes back, looks at the instructions, doesn't see knowledge, and thinks to itself, knowledge isn't required. So we can convict her, we can find her accountable, so long as she intentionally and knowingly delivered the letter without actually knowing the criminal intent of the letter.
Well, that's one possible interpretation of what the jury was doing.
Well, the fact that there's one possible interpretation.
Counsel, let me make my former question here. If your interpretation is correct, why did the jury submit the note in the first place?
Because it was confused. The instructions were confusing. The prosecutor confused the jury. It misstated the law over and over and over again in the shared intent case by telling the jury that her delivery in and of itself proved her accountable. So the jury is left with has the prosecutor's misstatements of law, has these instructions that are silent regarding knowledge. And so it's asking the judge for guidance. And the judge had a duty to give the jury appropriate guidance to make sure that it found every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt.
Despite counsel saying, no, judge, I don't want you to do this. I want you to tell them they have their instructions now. And of course, the question was, does the defendant have to know the intention of the letter was to annoy, harass? If that's not, someone apparently in the jury raised this question. And if this question is not answered, why wouldn't it be appropriate for counsel to conclude, if we don't answer that question, this same person or persons might say, I'm uncertain and confused and I'm not willing to convict. Why is that unreasonable?
Because the uncertainty, with the judge's response, it directed them to think that knowledge wasn't required. The response led the jury to think the exact opposite the defense attorney wants. No sound.
If that were the case, why would the jury have submitted this question in the first place if your assessment is correct as to what the jury was thinking?
The jury was confused because of the prosecutor's misstatements of law and because of the instructions, and it needed guidance.
Well, again, you've conceded the jury was confused. I think that's appropriate. Why is it ever ineffective assistance of counsel for the defense attorney to say, I don't want to clear up the jury's confusion?
I think in this case, the confusion needed to be clarified, and it was the judge's duty as well to resolve the jury's confusion on a substantive legal question. It was a critical point of law in this case. The entire crux went to what Victoria knew, and somehow that got lost in this entire trial, probably because the prosecutor's repeated misstatements of law saying that her knowledge didn't matter, that as long as she delivered the letter, she's guilty. So it's not surprising that the jury was confused, but there was no evidence that she knew of the letter's criminal intent. She testified she didn't read the letter in its entirety before she delivered it to Richard. Her actions are completely inconsistent with a criminal intent. It is undisputed that she did not pressure Richard or tell him to testify in a certain manner. Richard and Victoria testified that Richard repeatedly asked her what he should do, and her answer was always the same: I don't know. And we can't forget that because Victoria gave the letter to Richard, he's now in prison for abusing Rico. It was only because of this letter that the police actually investigated Richard. But Victoria's conduct was completely reasonable. She got a letter she thought was intended for herself. She opened it up, saw a couple lines, realized it was intended for Richard, and she brought it to Richard. Her actions are completely reasonable, and had the jury been properly instructed, had it properly understood the law of accountability, had it received the proper guidance from the judge, had the prosecutor not misstated the law repeatedly, the jury would have voted to acquit.
You're arguing all of this about what she did based upon her testimony as if it were scripture, which the jury could not fail to accept. Why is that the case?
Because it was unrebutted, and the evidence is actually—
The jury, having heard the defendant's explanation, has to say, this is unrebutted. No one has said otherwise, not guilty. Is that how it works?
No, but her testimony was unrebutted, and the evidence actually supports her testimony. When she got the letter, she called Richard. She didn't say, hey, Richard, I have this letter, and it's asking you to lie on the stand and take the blame. She just said, I have something to give you. I need to see you. If she had read the letter, she would have presumably said that. Also, when she got in the car, she gave Richard the letter. Richard read it and gave it to her to read to make sure he was understanding it correctly. Now, if she had already read the letter, like the state speculates, she would have said, no, I already read the letter. You're reading it correctly. It's asking you to get up on the stand and take the blame for Rika's death. So the evidence actually is consistent with Victoria's unrebutted testimony that she did not read the entire letter. The only thing the state can point to that she read the entire letter is speculation, that she must have read the letter because otherwise she would not have known it was intended for Richard, which is completely inaccurate. Those three lines or the two lines that she read implicating Richard in Rika's abuse alerted her to the fact that she was not the intended recipient. So the evidence actually does support Victoria's testimony, and had the jury been properly instructed and understood the law of accountability and had this prosecutor not misstated the law of accountability repeatedly, this jury would have voted to acquit. Are there any other questions?
Seeing none, was there any further argument you wish to make, Ms. Bodden?
That's it.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Manchin.
May it please the court, counsel. In this case, the state was not required to prove this, only required to prove the specific intent to harass. Contrary to counsel's repeated assertion, this was not limited to specific intent to harass. The prosecutor's argument that the letter and Ms. Clay had the intent to get Roundtree to lie on the stand is a separate intent from the intent to harass. And the prosecutor argued that the defendant shared the intent to get Roundtree to lie, which again is a separate offense from intent to harass. So this is in fact a common design case where you're planning to commit a armed robbery of the cornered liquor store and you end up killing the clerk instead. That what you're you're intending to commit suborning perjury or communicating with a witness to influence their testimony, but instead you commit the separate offense of witness harassment, which is causing mental anguish and distress. So that this is not strictly limited and was not limited by the prosecutor to a specific intent, nor was there any misstatement of the law in arguing the common design, which does not require the specific intent to commit the final crime. In the robbery murder situation, you don't have to intend to commit the robbery. It just has to occur in furtherance of the planned robbery. Here we have the infliction of emotional distress committed or occurring in the course of an attempt to influence a witness to testify falsely. That is common design, and that is sufficient to support the defendant's conviction.
Mr. Manchin, could you comment on counsel's argument relating to the jury instruction and the bracketed portion of the IPI instruction?
From my recollection of the record, the instructions that were given, which did not include the bracketed information, were agreed to by both parties. So the claim being raised for the first time here in oral argument that the instructions were inadequate is waived.
Your argument is that not so much inadequate, but they didn't conform to common design. So, the same intent argument as opposed to common design.
Well, while common practice might be to include both forms of specific intent and common design in the accountability instructions, there is no legal requirement that says that if you don't do it, it is automatically reversible error.
Well, my question then would be on the instructions as given, the just general accountability instruction, without anything further, can that instruction support a jury's finding of common design guilty verdict?
I believe it can, because the common design language is just a further explication or further development or explanation of that original language of accountability of, let's see if I can find the language that, you're accountable for commission if before or during the offense with the intent to promote or facilitate it, you aid, agree, attempt to aid a person in the planning a commission. The common design is just a description of how you can aid, agree, promote, and as opposed to a separate, totally separate instruction. And with regard to the jury court's answer, the again, as Justice Steigman points out, this is a matter of judgment on the part of counsel. So he could very well hope that a confused jury is more likely to convict. The fact that he rolled the dice, so to speak, and lost does not mean that that decision was ineffective or that no reasonable attorney would make that decision. We see this all the time where a further instruction is requested by the jury and defense counsel either asks for or agrees to a response, you have all the instructions. Then on appeal, the same claim is raised that he should have acted differently. Counsel's argument regarding ineffective assistance is simply that a different attorney might have or should have acted differently and requested a different instruction. The counsel's suggestion that the jury court should have just answered yes is incorrect. If a further instruction was required, the instruction should be given would be the full instruction with all the bracket information and not just simply yes, you have to have specific intent, because for accountability, you do not have to have specific intent. There are two forms of accountability.
Mr. Manchin, you heard my question to Ms. Boddy about the old saw about how confused juries are less likely to convict and it's a good thing for the defense, et cetera, and how in this case, defense counsel might very well have concluded based on the question from the jury, there's confusion here, and the last thing I want to do is to clear it up. You've been at this business a long time, so my question is this. Has there ever been a specific case that you can recall which has addressed precisely this circumstance and pointed out that it's important as opposed to just the kind of chit-chat among courts and trial lawyers and the like?
I cannot recall ever seeing a case where defense counsel was found ineffective for saying you have all the instructions you need.
Have you seen any appellate court recognition of the old saw that there's merit behind the notion that confused juries are less hesitant to convict?
I have seen cases, I can't cite them by name or off the top of my head, where the courts have said, yes, counsel could well be decide, let's not clear up the confusion just because he hopes that the confusion works in his behalf. But yes, there are cases out there that say that, where they say first, they say that it's improper to say, act in this way, and then say your attorney was incompetent because acted that way, because you're inviting error and inviting reversal based upon your own conduct. And would encourage attorneys to say, no, I don't want a response, knowing that he's going to get reversed because he should have asked for a response. I think that this is a case where the jury could find the defendant guilty on accountability under either theory, either because she knew of the intent to try to influence the witness that instead caused mental anguish, or because they knew in the intent to cause mental anguish. You're presumed to know the natural consequences of your actions. The jury was not required to believe, even if it's not contradicted, the jury was not required to believe the defendant's testimony that she did not read the letter. And counsel points to two sentences in the letter that proves that she could have read part of the letter without knowing its contents. She ignores that the very next sentence is, I just need to tell you that you did not do these things. You are a man and can take this better. I tried not to involve you in this, knowing that you are innocent. And then she goes on to tell him, you need to say you did these things. That's in the very next sentence after the sentences picked, cherry-picked out of this letter by counsel. So to say that she could have read the letter without realizing it intended to make intended to influence Rountree to lie ignores the contents of the letter. In fact, in the very, I think the very first five sentences of the letter, you can tell that she's asking him to lie. So just picking up the two sentences that don't refer to the lie doesn't remove the intent to influence the lie from the letter, or does not eliminate the defendant's knowledge. Defendant's knowledge that she was also shown as that of the intent to harass or to influence the witness is shown by her continued contact with Clay in jail and her veiled coded language talking about the delivery of the letter. So to say that she is when asked to pass this letter to the defendant, knowing it had been you had to know that was smuggled out of the jail for it to get to her. Deliver a letter smuggled out of jail, being instructed to deliver to him with knowledge of its contents, she has the intent to influence him, or she knows the intent to influence a lie, and she would be guilty of harassing a witness when the crime of jury harassment occurs, when it causes emotional distress. So I think that the conviction here is proper, and there was no error in the prosecutor's argument because the state can and properly did argue both strings of accountability to the jury. All right, if there are no further questions, I will stand on my brief with respect to the other issues raised.
All right, I see none. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Boddy, you have a chance for a rebuttal.
Hi, just a few points. The separate offense counsel mentioned of communicating with a witness, it's the same as harassment of a witness. The hypothetical offenses counsel wrote in his brief all involve influencing a witness to testify a certain way. It's the exact same offense as a harassment of the witness. And if the common design theory was argued, why did the state during the motion for new trial specifically argue and only argue that the evidence proved Victoria's specific intent to harass and annoy Richard? And why during trial, when it was cross-examining Victoria, when it asked a series of questions related to her state of mind, and counsel objected, and the state said, well, these questions are relevant because, quote, her specific intent is at issue in this case. Why then did the entire defense closing argument was the state can't prove her specific intent. This was a specific intent case. It always was a specific intent case. It is not a common design case. No one argued below. No one even said the words common design or any words related to common design theory ever. This was always a shared intent case, and it's completely inappropriate for the state to now argue on appeal for the first time that this was a common design case. It wasn't argued that way below, and the state can't argue it now. And it's telling as to prosecutorial misconduct, the entire state's argument is that the comments were proper under the common design theory. It's telling that the state didn't make a single attempt to justify the remarks under the shared intent theory because it can't. The comments are so improper under the shared intent theory. And those are the comments that confuse the jury, that cause the jury's confusion, that prompted the question about whether or not knowledge was required, because the state was saying it's not. The state was saying your conduct of delivering a letter in and of itself proved your guilt in this case. And that's simply not true. And counsel, there was no sound strategic reason for a defense attorney to not suggest a different answer. Counsel was ineffective for not objecting to the prosecutor's closing remarks. This isn't the only instance he was ineffective. And he was ineffective for agreeing with the prosecutor's suggested response. And that's an important point. It's not like he authored the response or came up with the response. It was the state that came up with the response. The judge gave it, the trial court agreed.
Why does that matter? Why does it matter that he simply agreed as opposed to coming up with the response, suggested response initially?
Because this wasn't an active a decision on his part where he came up with the idea and said, this is how we should handle it. I'm showing you how I want it handled. It was more of a passive, okay, that's fine. Kind of like a failure to object, like the failure to object to the prosecutor's closing remarks. He should have objected.
If he had come up with the idea himself and spoke first, you would not be making this argument?
I probably still would be arguing he was ineffective, but I think the argument then would be weaker if he came up with himself. He didn't come up with himself. He agreed to it, and there was no reason for a defense attorney to agree to telling the jury to go back to the instructions that didn't answer the most important point in this case.
Does the record show whom the trial court asked to first respond?
I don't recall. I just know that the state was the one that came up with the response, and the judge agreed, and then the trial attorney agreed. But no, there's no sound strategic reason for a defense attorney to not want to clarify the law on this critical point when the crux of the case was Victoria's knowledge. And she could not have intentionally facilitated the crime without knowing of the letter's criminal intent. And the evidence shows that she did not know the letter's criminal intent. Her actions are completely inconsistent with the criminal intent. She did not pressure Richard or say anything to influence his testimony in any way. The state failed to prove her mens rea, though she facilitated the crime by delivering the letter, but she didn't do it with the requisite criminal intent. And the state's repeated reliance on the common theory now is just a way to run away from its failure to prove that mens rea. It's inappropriate for the state to rely on it now. Under the shared intent theory, she was not proved guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And had the jury properly understood the law, a rational jury would have voted to acquit her. I have nothing further.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The court will take this matter under advisement. The court stands in recess.